Blog Talk Radio.
The views and opinions of the host do not necessarily represent the views and opinions of the BAIO, the Black African Infrastructure Organization.
Do you believe in the concept of an independent diaspora nation state for the descendants of the transatlantic slave trade, the biggest crime in the history of humanity? Are you tired of Black African people being scattered across a diaspora, living as second and third class citizens in foreign lands? Should Black African people have their own Israel? If you believe and support any of these positions, check out the BAIO social network on Ming. People with various thoughts and opinions on reality coming together with like mind toward a singular goal and common denominator, land, infrastructure, and nationhood. Visit BAIOAfricStand5.ming.com. That's BAIOAfricStand5.ming.com. Black African power and a BB Fahodie. Total African liberation. Peace.
Is this what you want to be their entertainment, their playthings? Their pets? Cowering beneath a whip. And then fighting amongst ourselves. Is this what you want?
I've lived by their rules my entire life. I've protected them. Envied them. And for what? To be treated like an animal.
We are not animals! We do have a choice! We can choose to be more than this! We can be slaves! Or we can be!
You are now listening to 13 Revolution on the BAIO Radio. Here is your host, Minister Dawood Mohammed.
That's gonna give you.
Assalamu alaikum, Hotep, peace, Black African Power. It's your host once again, Brother Minister Daoud, bringing the 13 Revolution Experience to BAIO Radio. Not going to be very long today, but have to get some things out that I've been thinking about for a while that pertain to what we're trying to do and the ideas that we are trying to espouse and make catch on like a virus. I want to say, brothers and sisters, as I always say, BAIO, we are the Black African Infrastructure Organization. Our methodology, our philosophy, and what we live by can be encapsulated in three words and one question. Land, infrastructure, nationhood, question being, what is the end game? We believe at the BAIO, both black men and women, that as a people, that the solution to all problems ultimately in America is the acquisition of land, the building, maintaining, and controlling, and defending of infrastructure, and the ability with both of these secured to be able to proudly claim and defend nationhood. We don't think any of the black power movements that's in America, the Moors, the Nation of Islam, the Black Panthers, the Hebrew Israelites, the Kemetic Society, we don't believe that this excludes any of those schools of thought. In fact, BAIO is inclusive of all those schools of thought. We believe the concept of nationhood is a concept that all of the leaders and teachers of these great movements, this is what they all eventually wanted to get to. They all wanted a nation of their own, and the gathering of the movement was a preparation for all of the members to begin to invest their money, their time, their resources, their family into the building of this nation, whether it would be here in America or off the shores of America. We almost achieved that with Honorable Elijah Muhammad, to some degree with Noble Drew Ali, and to some degree with Marcus Garvey. But in the striving for that, each one of these leaders either passed away or was deported or was murdered. And so therefore, brothers and sisters, we believe that we of the third generation now, and if you're listening to me today, you may have grown up in the second, and you may even have some experience with the first, but now we're in the third generation of the revolution. And I have a war book that says every three generations, there's a revolution. So these young brothers and sisters now, they need guidance. They need a plan. They need direction. And they need a future. And we say, why not give them the ultimate thing? So now here comes the question. The question that supplements all three of those letters, being land, infrastructure, and nationhood, affectionately known to us as LIN, is what is the end game? If you're in the Nation of Islam, what's the end game? If you're in the Moorish Science Temple, what is the end game? If you claim to be a Pan-Africanist, a Garveyite, what is the end game? If you're a Hebrew Israelite, what is the end game? Because you must bear witness that most of your leaders and teachers have passed away or have been effectively neutralized. So what are you going to do next? How are you going to carry on their legacy? And what do you want your name to be attached to? In my judgment, I think that the most noble cause, the most effective cause, and the one that you would say that you would be most proud of is to be able to say and to be able to experience building a nation off the shores of America. We in the BAIO choose that to be the land of our ancestors on the continent of our ancestors. However, there are some of you who believe that you can do that here. We believe that we believe, and the BAIO, our philosophy is that anything built in America will be a satellite community. I don't find nothing wrong with that. It doesn't mean you can't build anything in America. It doesn't mean you won't build anything in America. But what it does mean is for it to be respected, for it to be protected, and for it to be effective, your headquarters has to be off the shores of America, outside of the American system and their influence. And so therefore, this is why we wanted off the shores of America. But just like there's a Chinatown and there's a China, just like there's a little Italy and there's an Italy, just like there is a Jewish community in all of the major cities, but there's an Israel, brothers and sisters, we need a nation of our own. We don't find it to be racist. We don't find it to be separatist. We don't find this to be antisocial, but we understand that as a people, we have no place that we can really call our own. We have no place that really wants to claim us. So we figure, as black men and women that are born in America, that we should then build a nation in our image and our likeness that we can do trade with, that we can seek refuge in, and that would give us leverage and power and also be a force multiplier for all of our business endeavors, our medical endeavors, and our security endeavors. I'm so grateful to Lord to be here with you once again, brothers and sisters, after maybe almost a month of layoff. Life got busy for me, and that's pretty much it. I'm not going to apologize. But I have some stuff that I want to talk to you about this week. I'm really blowing up for my show that's going to be next week entitled 13 Shades Darker. But this issue is burning in the minds of people, and it's ongoing until a draft happens. So it's something that I think we want to talk about. Let me read this to you before we get on with the get on here. Honorable Elijah Muhammad says to us, brothers and sisters, he says, "We cannot be successful in the house of our enemies. We should be in our own house. That which is other than our own is for those who are other than our own. Our own is unlimited, physically and spiritually. There are those who think that our lack of freedom, justice, and equality can be solved in the white man's crooked and corrupt politics. But these so-called leaders who think this political strategy will solve our problem are as far, far wrong as the distance from the east to the west." You know, brothers and sisters, over the last course of months, a brother has come to most of our attention. And if you watch basketball, if you watch football or baseball, or even if you just basically fire up your computer and you're looking at Yahoo, Google, or whatever news site that they're giving you now, you must have heard the name LeVar Ball. And I'm not sure if that's the legal name that this gentleman was born with, but what I do know is LeVar Ball is a man that used to play basketball, was not very successful. But through, producing children, he produced three young men. And LeVar was able to guide all three men to his chosen profession, which is basketball. I have no problem with that. So in the course of guiding them that way, he's been really, really, he's really, really disciplined, very focused with them. And now his oldest son, being Lonzo, is getting ready to declare what has declared and get ready to be chosen in the NBA draft. Some say he's going to the Celtics, but most say he's going to the Lakers. That's where his father is trying to push him towards. And this is a man who has basically been very vocal, very outspoken at where he wants his son to go, what he wants his son to do. He was very vocal in his career at UCLA, and now he's very vocal in his coming to the NBA. I really don't have any problem with that, brothers and sisters, because I think that in America, like, we are living in a very hypocritical contradictory paradigm. And what I find is that most times people want a dad to be in their children's life, and they want a dad to be around their children, specifically black dads. Whenever there's crime, there's no fathers in the home. Whenever there's murders, they're saying these children are not being raised, you know, by fathers. They're just being raised by mothers. And you have the growing outcry from political pundits and people that's on YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and the like, Blog Talk too, that say that, you know, that the problem with our people as a whole in America is that we're growing up in single-parent households. So here's a man. Now, this is not a man with a black wife, but nevertheless, it's a black man who took interest in his children, from his children. And not only that, he was able to pass down his skill to them, which is the skill of playing basketball. And so, therefore, I have no problem with that. In fact, I support him, I champion him, and he just recently got attacked by a white woman on a show called The Herd that I listen to from time to time. And in this show, she had already said some slick things about him, but he put her in check. Now, if you're a black man and you've worked in an office and you deal with passive-aggressive office politics, then you already felt a certain level of vindication. when a man can go on somebody else's show in somebody else's house and tell a woman, you know, that that's already been taking shots at him, stay in your lane. You felt that. You championed that. You felt good about that. I know I did. And so, again, with all of these things, I'm not against that. But here's where the controversy comes and the framework of what I want to talk about today real briefly. So you know that when any athlete is a good athlete, good at what he does, exciting and electrifying, what usually ensues, inevitably, is that he gets offered some kind of endorsement, a.k.a. a shoe deal. And so Mr. Ball was given a shoe deal, or excuse me, Mr. Ball went and procured his own shoes, got his own manufacturing, got his own styling, and came up with some shoes that looked pretty good. And everybody is saying that this is a blessing and they're championing him, and they're saying that this is great, and this is not only great, but it's great for a black dad. And in the process of it, they're saying that, oh, well, he's not choosing to go to Nike, Adidas, or Puma. He's going to sell his shoes himself. Now, mind you, I was with somebody this weekend that bought some Jordan shoes, and they were actually championing Jordan and saying that it's a good thing that he left Nike and now he has his own brand. I buy sneakers so little, I didn't even know that. But here's where the problem comes, brothers and sisters. The problem is not that he has shoes. The problem is that he wants to sell these shoes at $495. You listen to me, brothers and sisters. People in America, we black people who have grown up in the 70s, 80s, and the 90s, even, you know, the 60s to some degree, but I would say more so in the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s. Do you know what $495 sneakers mean to us? Do you know what high costing basketball or tennis shoes mean to us? Well, let me give you my synopsis of this. We're going to go to break. We're going to come back at it even harder. See, for me, I grew up in an era where Converse was the great sneaker. Pro Keds was the great sneaker. These were cheap sneakers that everybody had, and it would run down within 3 months, but everybody had a pair. There also was a pair of sneakers called Clydes that we would have, but these are the basic sneakers that almost everybody wore. At some point, though, somebody figured out that black people like to look snazzy, and they began to sell us very high-priced sneakers. And so the sneaker price went from $20 to $30 all the way up to $40 and $50. And $50 was a lot of money in the 80s, and it was a lot of money for sneakers. And so what ended up happening is eventually Michael Air Jordan came into the league, and he got his endorsement deal with Nike, and he began to sell his shoe, and this was the beginning of a long legacy of murder, bloodshed, and mayhem in the black community, because just as you would buy these sneakers, somebody would be waiting for you in a staircase wanting to take your sneakers. And just as you would buy these sneakers and go in and out of your building, somebody would inevitably want to kill you for these sneakers. And just as you would go in the hallway in school, somebody would want to beat you up and take your sneakers. You see where I'm coming from with this? You see, for me, the problem I have is not specifically with LeVar Ball. The problem that I have starts with the idea that you and I would spend all of this money on a pair of sneakers and we don't have our priorities in order because there's so much more things that we can do with our money, but we feel that we're getting a leg up. We feel that we're making progress. We feel that we are winning, hashtag winning, because we have bought something of high fashion, given all of this money for this, but really what could you have done with the money that you paid for and what could you have done with $495? What about the families that have two children? What about the families that have three children, four children, and five children? What about Christmas time? A Muslim follower, Anbelize Muhammad, I don't believe in Christmas. I don't follow Christmas, but many of you do. And what about Christmas time? What about Christmas time for multiple children? You see where I'm coming from? So if you're going to take, and people will say, well, not many people can afford these sneakers anyway. What if Lonzo Ball becomes an amazing basketball player? What if he becomes such a great player that he rivals LeBron James and even Kobe Bryant? Then that will drive up the market value. It will drive up the desire, and people will do anything they can to get these shoes. And for me, you know, it starts with the danger of it, but really what it evolves to is, what would you be doing with your money if you didn't buy that? Let me say this to you, brothers and sisters. We at the BAIO, me, Holla, Kala, Mac, Dez, Sister Salima, we, Ivy the Queen, we want to build a nation. We want to gather up as many black people who have know-how to build a nation off the shores of America. And what I'm saying to you is this. When your mind is fixated on high fashion that costs so much money that you cannot spend your resources and devote your resources to the things that are important, when we're asking you, you know, if the time comes where we ask you for a donation, if the time comes where we ask for us to, all of us to put our resources together, and every time that happens, you cough and say you ain't got it, but you got it for LeVar Ball sneakers. You got it for glasses with gold on them. You got it for a silk interior leather jacket. You got it for a sheepskin coat. Then for me, what that says to me beyond a shadow of a doubt is that you and I have not learned anything from the 80s and 90s when we were killing each other over these sneakers, and that somehow, some way, somebody needs to sound the alarm so that you and I can focus on nationhood and leave materialism back where we're supposed to be leaving it. We'll be back.
Jump on this beat like this one here is for you, because I think you can relate to some of the shit I've been through. Fuck all the haters, if you hating, middle finger to you. It's time to give the people something they can relate to. See, I done been through a lot of shit. You can call me fatherless. Mama tried to raise me right, all she knew was Bible shit. Didn't have an education, victim of indoctrination. Started trying to raise myself, now I'm trying to raise a nation. Freeing one mind at a time. Holla if you feel me and you're feeling alright. I really like it when you're educated. Might like you a little more if you are melanated. Yeah, I'll admit it, I can be a little prejudiced. If you're feeling kinda sensitive, take a sedative. I am venomous with an elegance. Forgive me if I'm argumentative. Must be the adrenaline, that's irrelevant. Must be the intelligence, I'm irreverent. Just tired of settling. I'm a victim of the motherfucking system. Nah, let me switch it. I'm a motherfucking victor, a survivor. Use a liar if you think that I am not. Fear fire, and I got a lot of bullets in this class. I am God, mother.
Honorable Elijah Muhammad says once again, there are probably many independent people who do not have among them many who have the know-how of the American educated class of so-called Negroes. We have enough technicians such as mathematicians, construction engineers, civil engineers, mechanical engineers, electrical engineers, physicists, chemists, educators, agriculturists, navigators, and aeronauts among the 22 million or more of us. You will find scholars or scientists whom we can use in every branch of government. Then there are our independent people outside of this country who would be glad to help us get going in country or state for ourselves. I say again, you will find scholars or scientists whom we can use in every branch of government. Then there are our independent people outside of this country who would be glad to help us get going in a country or state for ourselves. Honorable Elijah Muhammad speaking. We do not expect to build, nor do we desire to build a government patterned after the order of the white race. Naturally, we would need help for the next 20 to 25 years. After that, we would be self-supporting. The spirit of doing for self is now fast coming into our people. They only need a new education of self and others. Okay, so let's talk about this new education. And I'd like to open this particular subject with a story, brothers and sisters, if I will. Okay, so you know from listening to me that I myself, Brother Dawood, I am the son of a woman that's a banker, and I'm a son of a security technician, both physical and electronic. And what happens is that, you know, my dad and my mom split when I was 8 years old. A lot of times if you were in a two-parent family and the two parents are together and unified, then you really don't get to see whose values is what, per se, because it's one voice and they all speak on one accord. However, when your mother and your father break up when you're younger, or you just have to be with your mom or whatever, then you get to see the contrast between the two values. And a lot of people say, well, you know, when people come together, when they marry, they say that, they got to have something similar because people choose somebody similar to them. I don't agree with that. That's not always the case. I think that we choose people for various different reasons. I think sometimes we choose people for lust. I think sometimes we choose people because they fit an emotional need. I think sometimes we choose people for various different reasons. We may be in a lurch and they help us out, or they may be in a lurch and we help them out. We always look for somebody that we wanted to save. We always look for somebody we wanted to help, and they did fit that bill. If one person is insecure and the other person is vulnerable, we get together for that reason. Sometimes we're attracted to somebody not only because of sexual attraction, but sometimes we're just attracted by their physical person, their physical appearance, or from certain things that they show from their personality. So there's various different reasons why we get together, brothers and sisters. But nevertheless, a lot of times what you find in a split, the reason why the two split is because there's a contrasting, there are two contrasting personalities. One is the East, one is the West. And this is the concept of men are from Mars, women are from Venus, is trying to show you that men are different from women. And a lot of times, you know, men have certain characteristics and women do also. So anyway, from the split, my mom actually left my dad, and I grew up with my mom. My mom was stylish. She was into fashion. She had a good grip and control over her money. But at the same time, my mom always had that which was new. I remember when I was younger and my dad was working at the Transit Authority in New York City, as well as, working his locksmith business at night, my mom had a mink coat, nice fur coat. And so this is how I grew up, and that's what I grew up around. But when my dad left my mom, she didn't necessarily have that kind of money in the beginning because she, you know, wasn't working. She was a housewife. So she had to jump into the workforce and kind of struggle her way up. So for many years, we didn't really have a lot, but we lived in a nice building, and the building was called the co-op. So in the co-op, you know what I'm saying, brothers and sisters, it's not necessarily like most buildings in New York City. It's sort of, I won't say most buildings, but it's not necessarily like your standard stock public housing. It's more of a middle-class setting. The doors are locked, you have a tenants patrol, you have a maintenance staff, you have those kind of things. And so it costs more. And the children that I grew up around, they, you know, had mostly two-parent families, even though I didn't. And they did have semi-nice things, but not the nice things that I saw in other children. And so this is what I grew up around. And so eventually, through what my dad does, I got older. And when I did connect with my dad as I got older, I got to live with his values. So check this out. This is what happened. You know, I started going over to my dad's house and helping out with his business and things like that. And you know how it is, brothers. Eventually, when you get to be in your late teens as a man, you're going to try your mom. All of us have done it. Don't say you didn't do it. And, you know, you get a little bit more rebellious. So you're like, man, I'm going to test the limits. I'm going to come in a half hour late. I'm going to not do my homework, all this kind of stuff. So making a long story short, I ended up going out with my dad for a weekend. My dad kept me late, and I ended up coming back, but I really didn't care. My mom was fed up with it, so she kind of locked me out. So I was like, well, the hell with that. I'm going to live with my dad. So now I'm going to live with my dad. And the whole time, I thought this would be a nice idea, and it was cool. He had a business. He had been selling. Me living with him the whole time anyway. So now I'm living with my dad. And living with my dad was a total stark contrast to living with my mom. Because the whole summer, as soon as I got to be 13, every summer I worked all summer, and I took all the proceeds from my work and bought school clothes. But the school clothes I bought wasn't standard school clothes. They was high fashion school clothes. And my mom encouraged it. She'd take me out to New Jersey, and she just, you know, allowed me to spend all my money out there. So I would spend all my money out there trying to look fly and get me at least a uniform or, you know, an outfit for every day of the school week. And then, you know, you did that, and then you kind of switched up after a while. So be that as it may, brothers and sisters, like moving in with my dad was different because when I moved in with my dad, I didn't have all the clothes that I had from home. So my dad promptly took me out to New Jersey, but we didn't go to Secaucus where there was no state tax. We went to Kmart. And so now I got to go to the slack aisle and get a pair of slacks for every day of the week. Now I got to go to the button-down aisle and get a button-down shirt for every day of the week. Now I got to go get some $30, $40 sneakers when I had $70 sneakers living with my mom. And do you understand the picture that I'm trying to paint for you? So in the earlier part of my life, I learned or I was exposed to the high fashion mentality. But in the later part of my life, I was exposed to the conservative mentality because my dad was a man that was making really good money living in Brooklyn and Clinton Hill, but he was living in a one-bedroom apartment with him, his lady, and his son. His son stayed in the room. My dad and his lady stayed on a futon in the living room, and they had money like you wouldn't believe. And I didn't understand what I was looking at. I really didn't. It took me a couple of years to understand what I was looking at. But what I'm trying to tell you is I got a first-class education of what it was like to live within your means and below your means, but to be successful at what you did, because my dad, even back then, had at least five to six, and I'm not exaggerating, five to six letters behind his name, was wealthy, had people coming from New Jersey, Staten Island to get his locker room services, but he was living in a one-bedroom apartment. You understand what I'm saying, brothers and sisters? See, when I clap at this whole, when I clap at this whole mentality of being out there and and spending money on $495 sneakers. When I clap at the mentality of buying $200 and $300 glasses with gold on the side of them. When I clap at the mentality of wearing sheepskin coats and leather jackets, and mind you, I got a leather jacket, but I didn't have it until I was 30, and I got it from the Browns and Coat Factory. But the premise is this. Brothers and sisters, there are so many of you out there. You are following these trends, and you know damn well you don't have a pot to piss in or a window to throw it out. You know damn well that you are living check to check, and the people who don't wear the stuff that you wear, you know you are asking them for $20 to get to your next check. And that's what would happen to me, because people would see me and they would say, hey, you know, like, can I borrow, you know, such and such, can I borrow $20, I'll give you $30 back on my check. They would have the nicest clothes, they would have the nicest everything. So you may ask me, well, Brother Devil, are you trying to lecture us? Are you trying to lecture us on fashion? Are you trying to lecture us on values? What does this have to do with nationhood? Oh, it's very simple, brothers and sisters. I got a question to ask you. Okay? If you're going to do it in America, or you're going to do it across the seas, some of you say we're going to build in Africa. Some of you say you want to build in India. Some of you say you want to build goddamn South America. And some say you want to build in five states in the South. Okay. I grant you that, but here's my question to you. How much is the plane trip to there going to cost? How much is the articles of incorporation going to cost? How much is the flag, the national and the standard, and having it recognized going to cost? How much will it cost to pay a standing military? How much will it cost to pay a standing medical staff? How much will it cost to pay a standing research staff? See, you can clap back at me on Facebook and say, oh, Brother Minister is just hating. See, these hating dudes, a man is just trying to do this with his child and this, that, and the next thing. I don't give a damn about those sneakers. And I don't give a damn about LeVar Ball and his son. They are well-to-do, and they will never meet me, and if they do, they will never care about me. What I'm saying to you today, brothers and sisters, is that in order for you to actually secure anything close to nationhood, it's going to take, like I always say, it's going to take strong, grown-up money. How are you going to have strong, grown-up money if you are constantly spending your money on stuff that you know full well is not a substantive, is not going to last, and quite frankly, is just so you can look cute in front of somebody else? How is that going to happen? How are you supposed to ever donate to any cause that you could put together your money, your resources, and your time? How are you supposed to do that when whenever you're doing it, whenever you get some spare change? I'm sorry. I'm going wild with it. Whenever you get some spare change, you use the spare change for frivolous things like this. Now, I'm not trying to say I don't buy nice stuff, because if you see my profile, then you know I wear nice suits and I wear decent shoes. Decent is the key. But what I'm telling you is most of the people I know that invest in this kind of stuff are the people who are usually asking me for money, and people like me, and they're usually people who don't really have their stuff together. And when it comes down to it, brothers and sisters, when it comes down to nationhood, you know how you build a nation? You know how you get a nation up? You know how you think about even, starting the nationhood task? Well, the fact of the matter is, what you do is, you do it just like my dad. You build a nation by first and foremost living in a one-bedroom apartment, sleeping on a futon. That's the way you're going to do it in the land that you... It's like we've been saying. You started with a tent. The tent becomes a colony. The colony becomes a village. The village becomes a state. The state becomes more states, and more states become a nation. You and I'm not attacking... What I'm attacking, brothers and sisters, is a mentality. And the mentality is a wasteful, frivolous mentality where you and I say we want freedom. We say we want to be independent, but at the same time we are throwing our money away just to look good in America, but we say we're tired of being – our son's getting killed by America, our daughter's getting killed by America, and our rights being taken by America. How do you sound? How do you sound? So think about this, brothers and sisters, because at the end of the day, it's about this. At some point in my life, man, a switch went off in my head. And what I realized, quite frankly, was this. What I realized is that my sense of style was an okay thing to have. But if I was to be successful, if I was to survive, and if I was to pass something on to my son, then I would have to live more financially like my dad. More financially like my dad, and basically forget everything I learned about financials from my mom. We'll be back. is out. It's out longer, and, you know, it's a more happier time. And when I play darker tunes and things like that, I always, you know, it's all part of the artistic experience. I reflect on this whole thing before I read this passage, and I say to myself all the time that I don't want you to think that I'm here trying to be preachy, but, you know, our priorities really have to be in order, brothers and sisters. You know, it's like I do battle with people all the time who say, oh, you know, it's all about religion. And you got, you know, you got tons of cats on all of these social media sites, and they get on and all they do every day is talk about religion. And they make posts about religion, the fallacy of the Bible, the Quran, blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. And for me, you know what I'm saying? So then when we talk about nationhood, these very same people are the people who get metaphysical, abstract, spiritual, and ethereal with us, and we try to say, listen, you were banging on the religious people just a minute ago, and now that we're asking you to invest your time, not even your money, your time in nationhood, the only thing that you could come up with is that our people need a greater understanding of the Kemetic spirit, our people need a greater understanding of meditation and the reality of, it's like to me, you know, you replace religion with a religion. And if all the only thing that's coming out your mouth is religion is the problem, then to me you're stuck in a time warp. Because, brothers and sisters, it's like I was talking to somebody the other day, I will only say a couple of months ago. If you are still, I have to say this before I get on with it, because it's just in me. If you are still banging that anti-religious drum, then you basically are left in the early 2000s. If you are still clapping that anti-religious, you know what I'm saying, that anti-religious piece, then for me, what happens is that time has moved on and you're still stuck where you are. That was trendy in the early 2000s, late 2000s. And as I said before, almost everybody had some kind of anti-religious show on Blog Talk back then. I remember one person, after all of this happened, one person had added me on Blog Talk, and you could still add somebody as friends, and the name of his show was Red Hot Religion. I'm like, you idiot, dude, you're too late. That wave has already hit us and gone already. But for me, what I'm saying to you is this. I could care less what you believe in. What I want to know is, do you believe we need a nation of our own? And if the answer to that is some anti-religious stuff, then you're worse than the people that believe in religion. You're way worse. Because for me, what it is see, listen, if the only thing that comes out of your mouth is religion, white man, then what that means is that you're, to me, that you're not nuanced. And if you are studying, then you are studying one specific narrow-minded thing. Because the fact of the matter, brothers and sisters, is that what do you think? You're gonna eradicate all the religious people. It's going to be five of you left, and y'all going to make a nation? That sounds stupid. So anyway, Elijah Muhammad says here, during the time of Emancipation Proclamation, we were scattered to the winds without any knowledge or ability to undertake the responsibilities of a half freedom. Our fathers, lacking the skills and the training needed to provide for themselves, were forced to remain with the masses in order to receive even the barest necessities of life. Now check this out. Our former slave masters, knowing our dependence upon them, maliciously and hastily adopted attitudes and social and educational systems that have deprived us of the opportunity to become free and independent right up to this present day. But here's what I'm going to say to you, brothers and sisters. Now you have money. Now you have resources. Now you have opportunities. And now you have education. And if you were using that to pay for $495 sneakers, then you apply to everything what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad says. The only difference is you got to take the slave master out of it, because it's you doing it. And that's the purpose of me saying this. It's you doing it. Let me go down this lane for a second. Okay, so most of us, whether in the conscious community or out of it, whether in the Pan-African community or out of it, whether in the revolutionary and quote-unquote religious, black religious community and out of it, most of us are very dissatisfied with our source of income. Now, I'm saying us to be modest because I love what I do for a living, but we have now seen in the last 5 years an influx of people who have come to tell us that the answer to what our problems are is entrepreneurship, right? And everybody is saying that the key to us getting out of the situation we're in is, quote unquote, building. You got to build. It's all about building. You cannot build with a woman. You can't build with a man. You got to be building. You spend the money on Xbox and you should be building. You spend the money on sneakers when you should be building. You're tricking your money off to people and you should be building. That's what we're all saying. Let me ask you something. If you're paying for $495 sneakers, how much can you really build? Because here's some questions that you need to ask. To get going with the business, you need at least, at the very least, a DBA. Doing business as. How much does a DBA cost? Well, in the capital region, a DBA costs like $30. I'm pretty sure it's a minus price wherever you go. But real businessmen in this world don't respect the DBA. So you start out with a DBA just to get your feet in the water and say you're doing something. But eventually, you got to have the LLC. Let me ask you something, boy. How much does an LLC cost? LLC costs close to $1,000. Plus, you got to hire a lawyer. You starting to get where I'm driving at? Okay? So then, once you get an LLC, or you go through the process of LLC, then for somebody to trust you, I don't care what you do, I don't care where you are, You have to secure some kind of insurance. In my business, you have to have alarm insurance. Specifically, it's called errors and omissions insurance. So that if I put an alarm in your house, whether it be a burglar alarm or a fire alarm, let's just say it's a fire alarm, and what ends up happening is if there's a fire alarm, somebody sets a fire, a sensor doesn't go off. You know the first thing that happens? An insurance company with the insurance adjuster and investigator, they're going to come to that place, they're going to go through that place with a fine-tuned comb and try to blame it on you, me, Mr. Devil, the person that installs the fire alarm. So I got to have insurance. How much do you think $1 million insurance cost? Now, you may say it's $1 million. If you said that, then you're definitely not in business. You're definitely not in business because $1 million insurance don't cost $1 million. Fool. Okay? But either way, I give you a hint. It's not under $1,000. So you're starting to get what I'm driving at? But maybe you're not convinced yet. Maybe you're not convinced yet. So if you're an electrician, a plumber, a carpenter, or somebody like that, how much do tools and test equipment cost? How much does that cost? And if you're going into business for yourself, then you need to transport your tools back and forth, or your equipment back and forth, or the supply back and forth. But let's just say you're in retail. So if you're in retail, then you have to rent a space or you have to lease a space. That's not $1,000. You get what I'm driving at here? So if you have a service vehicle, because you provide a service, not only do you have to rent a place if you're not going to work out of your house, but you got to pay for a vehicle and you got to pay insurance. And then you might want to be in the Yellow Pages. Nowadays, people pick up their phone and look up stuff, but it costs to be, you know, it costs to have a site on the internet also. But if you was in the Yellow Pages back in the day, let me tell you something, brother and sister. The Yellow Pages cost $400 a month. That's a pair of sneakers a month. So do you understand now why I'm against this kind of materialism? Materialism is a hindrance to nationhood, period, because the mentality suggests that I will spend my money, more money, on how I look than on how I eat and how I support my family. And I also will spend more money on how I look than how I will choose to support my community and the people that I'm trying to solve a problem with. Boom. And so, you know, not even getting to how much marketing costs, which is Mac 611's, that's his specialty. You got all of these costs that you're talking about going into business. And a lot of the people who get into high fashion, you are the people who be like, I want to be doing business, I want to be doing deals. How are you going to be doing deals when you're kicking out $495 on something that you're going to wear on your feet? And if you wear those sneakers to a construction site, that's stupid. If you wear those sneakers in the rain, that's stupid. If you wear those sneakers on the basketball court, that's stupid. Because if they're $495, and quite frankly, if you multiply that by four, which is, you know, most people will buy a pair of sneakers for the beginning of 6 months and one for the ending 6 months. You know what I'm saying? So you figure that's like 2 years worth of sneakers, man. And you can't make no money out of them. And they don't pay you anything. And really all you're doing is, let's keep it 100, the people who are criticizing me saying that I'm just hating on somebody's dad, let me tell you something. When you throw on somebody's sneakers just to have their name on them, what exactly are you doing? You're like caping for that person. You're like jumping on that person's, well, listen, you could use your imagination. So let me tell you this quick story, and then I'm going to go. I mean, actually, I'm going to let Mac run. So I spent some time in Jacksonville, Florida. Everybody knows that. People who know me know that. And while I was down there, what was surprising was my dad, you know, lured me down there as a locksmith, told me he was going to cheat me the trade. At that particular time, I really didn't know nothing about locksmithing, so it was a great idea for me, great ideal. Didn't really work out like I wanted it to, but either way, I was going to school while I was down there and working and going to the mosque every day, you know, when I had a chance. And eventually, you know what happened? Because there was a lot of, there was a substantial amount of black locksmiths down there. It was like 30. It's something I've never seen before in my life. And one day, my dad was telling me, one day while he was doing a car lockout, a brother pulled up to do a car right next to him in a BMW. This fool jumped out of the BMW with a BVD, if you're old enough, you know what a BVD is, a BVD with a gold chain, with a gold watch, a pair of Tims, shorts on, with lockout tools. My dad looked at me and he said, I was offended. Do you have any idea how unprofessional that looks? You went in there basically like a Negro. You went over there looking like you was hanging on the block. You jumped out of a car. First of all, in my field, you should never have shorts on because you just never know what might hit your legs. That's number one. Number two, quite frankly, you always to wear work boots because you never know what's going to hit your feet. Number three, you have on a button-down, specifically, preferably a button-down, but you could have a T-shirt on, shirt with a patch on it that basically represents your business. And when you go out there looking like that, you not only impugn and embarrass the trade of locksmithing, but guess what? You impugn and you embarrass black people that's locksmithing. Because now you've given somebody something they could talk about. And let me tell you something. That is so idiotic that nobody will ever forget that in their life. Let me ask you something, brothers and sisters. Are you telling me that this is how you plan to show off for nationhood? Is this how you plan to show off for negotiation? If you were to go to the United Nations to get a charter to open up to put a plot of land someplace off the shores of America, you're going to show up with a BVD, a gold chain, a two-finger ring, some LeVar balls, and some gold in your mouth? And how do you think you'll be received? And the thing is that we be looking at most of these rappers who go into these board meetings looking hip-hop, and you think that that's what you want to do in the professional world. But guess what, homie? It doesn't work like that. And so what I'm saying to you, brothers and sisters, is this. You can look at me as a square. You can look at me as a Republican, a conservative. I really don't care. Because the quotes I've read from the Honorable Elijah Muhammad back me up on what I'm saying, and I'm pretty sure if you use your common sense, you know damn well what I'm saying is correct. But at the end of the day, what I'm saying is materialism is a direct hindrance to nationhood. Because when your mind is more focused on how you look and who you're impressing, then the greater welfare of yourself first, your family second, and your people third, then what kind of nation can be built with you? What kind of really rational contract can be made with you? What kind of business could be done with a person who is more concerned about how expensive the clothes that he or she have on, how expensive their weave is, how expensive their eyelashes are and fingernails and things like that, in contrast to securing a future for your own? I'll leave you to judge that, and we'll be back.
We of the Black Watch now arrest the demonic mind state of mortals for the following crimes: religion, art, sciences, government, writing, mathematics, astrology, philosophy, inventions, culture, sense of reality, speech techniques, not to mention the tolerance of ignorance, raping of a people, subjecting blackness to an inhumane system, changing of facts, claiming the divine, disgracing a nation, production of a white kryptonite, trespassing on most sacred ground, trying to replace the flag of power with the symbols of slavery and the hardship of hundreds of years. By the way, vainglorious, this is protected by the red, the black, and the green at the crossroad with a key, sissy.
Right about now, it's my pleasure, my honor to bring forward my brother, my friend, my BEIO brother, Mac611. How you doing, big brother?
I'm good. I'm good, man. How you doing tonight, brother?
How have you been, man?
I'm good. Doing well. Enjoying the show tonight.
Thank you, brother. Yo, man, I'm sorry I couldn't get to you, man, when we were down there. It just didn't work out. You know what I'm saying? Like, it will eventually one day, but, you know, after the funeral, my lady really wasn't in good, in a good place, and we had to get back to, you know, my intention of meeting y'all is good, but I just never know, you know what I'm saying? So I'm
right.
Set to come down there by myself, I think, sometime soon, because I have a friend that I usually spend, like, a whole night with in Brooklyn that I grew up with, and I'll make it, like, a weekend, and then we'll all be together, but, you know, that'll happen. So either way, tell me what your thoughts are on this particular subject.
You broke down so many points that I echo, especially when it comes to nationhood and materialism.
Yes, sir.
You know, we grew up in the late 80s, 90s. It's about material things, and I think that's a young person's lane. You know, when you're in your early 20s, you're trying to look as fly as possible. So you're spending money, and you always see me saying, you know, I was a fly brother. I'm gonna say somewhere in between. What? I was always on a budget.
Right.
You know, I like you. I like nice things, and I think as I've gotten older, I'm becoming my grandfather's race. I like suits and shoes, but I get them on a budget. Mac is on a budget.
Right.
And my mom and her sister, they liked nice things, but they were always on a budget, you know. And,
right.
And I was raised in a household with my mother and grandparents. And when I got older, you know, I wanted fly things. I had a sheepskin, but I had to work to get my sheepskin.
Exactly.
Mom wasn't going to buy me my sheepskin. I wanted fly sneakers. You know, when you're raised in the hood back in our time, when you were a kid, you got a pair of shoes for Easter and a suit for Easter and an outfit to chill in. And Christmas, you might have gotten some clothes and some shoes.
Right.
And throughout the year, your parents got you basic needs. And it came. One of my boys.
That's not how it is now.
Right. one of my boys who lives in L.A. He's like my we go back like spinal cord.
Right.
So he came up to visit a couple of years ago, and so I got on these. Y'all know my favorite colors are orange and blue. So I got on a pair of gray and orange Nikes. He's like, yo, those are fly. He said, you always have fly sneakers. And I just laughed, and I was like, yeah, what a budget, bro. And I remember a point when I got, like, my first real job. I got a little happy with my money, and I had multiple pairs of sneakers. I never bought Jordans because I think they're ugly. And
yeah,
when it comes to sneaker culture, at a point where I got outpriced.
Sure.
You know, I had dope sneakers, and then as they got more and more expensive, I'm like, nah, I'm not spending $150 for a pair of sneakers. And then as I got older, I always had a pair of sneakers to look fly in and a pair of sneakers to play in. You know, I play ball.
Exactly. Exactly.
And now, as we, you know, I'm in my 40s now, so I got a pair of sneakers to walk around in, and I keep a pair of sneakers to play ball and sometimes.
Right.
Both. But I'm not sneaker crazy anymore, and I'm not material crazy anymore, and I wasn't really material of all balls. I, like you, I waited a while before I started to dislike him. I was like,
right.
Okay, I keep hearing about them, keep hearing about his kids, and then I heard him speak, and I immediately didn't particularly like him. What I noticed about him, he always says me. He doesn't say them, his son, most of the time. It's him he talks about. And he specifically said recently that, you know, he wanted to do a partnership deal with various sneaker companies, and he said he wanted $1 billion for him and his three sons. Notice he said him and his three sons. So he said now the deal is for $3 billion. He said y'all could have had me for one and I'd be on my way.
Huh.
I didn't hear about LeVar. I didn't hear about LaMelo and D'Angelo and the other son. I didn't hear their names. I heard him specifically say him, which brings me to who he is. It's really all about him and possibly his shortcomings in not becoming a basketball might is his love. Him not becoming a great basketball player. With the children in my family, if there's family members who have used in my family, there are family members who have used the athletic scholarship to go to school and get higher education.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that serious as to whether anybody in the family becomes a basketball player, a baseball player, or anything of that nature. And yes, I do a sports show, but it's not about that. We are gonna support them, and I have one of my cousin's children. He probably, at the moment now, he wants to be an oceanographer, which I think would be a great thing for a young black man.
Wow, that's beautiful. Yes, sir.
And he's approaching preteens, 12. And he reminds me a little bit of me and some of the other members of the family in that he's always got his head in a book. And I don't hear LeVar stressing scholastics. I hear him stressing basketball. And I have no problem with him trying to get his kids to where they need to be and not be pimped by the system and not be pimped by anybody else. Appreciate the materialistic value that he's already set as precedent to sell his sneaker. $495. You're surpassing Nike. You're surpassing Jordan, which is Nike. To correct you, Nike still owns the Jordan brand. They're more in a partnership with him than anything. They still own.
Oh, okay.
I think he has more control over design, but they still own the logo and they still own the brand.
Got you.
But they're more of a partnership. His sneakers are going to cost more than Jordan's, more than LeBron's sneakers, more than Steph Curry's sneakers. And he put himself, to me, in a box by putting the value so high. And people say, well, he can always lower the sneaker because it's his brand. And I'm like, well, that's coming from where we come from. Now I really ain't messing with you because that's how people will look.
Exactly.
You started at $4.95, man. You lowering the prices. And
yo, and you know what, big brother? If I may say, I'm sorry to cut you off, but I was listening to a show from Yvette Carnell, and she was saying that see, LeVar Ball does not have the same access to distribution that Jordan, Nike, Adidas, and Puma has. So the cost of making his shoes will be much more than the cost of making their shoes. So basically, he's setting himself up to fail from Jump Street. Now, nobody is suggesting that he should, like, oh, you know, you need to sell to this company so you can make more money. Nobody's saying that. But the thing is that he's already starting behind the eight ball. And for him to price those sneakers so high, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not sure if that's how much it costs to make those sneakers. I'm not really sure. But what I do know is that he doesn't have the same distribution channels as the white people. And using his mouth the way he has in the public has kind of drawn attention and ire. Because it's just it's the same thing with Kaepernick I was saying before. I love Colin Kaepernick. I love what he's done. I love what he's become. He had to show me a little bit more, and I was right for asking to see more. But now that I've seen him, I love what he's become. But I knew that that was his last season. I knew it. Because I knew, and if I was him, I would have never opted out. I don't know why the hell he did that. Because he should know better. You know what I'm saying? Them people got so mad at him, all of those white NFL owners, that they was like, if this fool opts out, we're not signing him again. And so that's why I was kind of like begging him in private, please don't opt out. But he did anyway. And now you see he's not going to play football. So I'm okay. I'm okay with not watching football this season if that's what we all better do. But we all better be doing it, not just, you know, a couple of us. But what I'm saying is, be that as it may, it's like when you look at that, to me, this is what ties into nationhood. The very fact that, you know, you don't have the same distribution channel, which really amounts to you don't have access to cheap Chinese workers. Well, wait a minute. If you had a continent on the if you had your nation on the continent of Africa, your people could make those sneakers, and your people in Africa, you set a precedent by paying them decent living wages and not putting them in a sweatshop situation. But we don't think nationhood, and so therefore we're like, oh, well, we're going to go to China. So you're going to jump over your motherland to go to China and get them people, or India, and get them people to work for 2 cents or 3 cents a day when you could have paid your own black African brother on the continent and gave him a better lifestyle. But at the same time, you would have an advantage because you would have good distribution. And to me, that's what this whole thing comes down to. What it comes down to when we talk about materialism and nationhood is we are not thinking about joining hands with our brothers and sisters abroad and giving them a chance to live a better life, at the same time doubling our chance and strengthening our chance to compete with other nations and races here in America, because we refuse to even acknowledge we got family over there unless it's because, you know what I'm saying, to look good or to say that we know something.
Right, right. And I think he's not a person who's going to look to nationhood, because he slammed Shaq on his sneakers because Shaq has sneakers that cost $16. And Shaq makes good money off of those sneakers, quiet as kept. And you might not see him in the big city like New York or Chicago or L.A., but in Middle America, to sell. And you talk about distribution. He doesn't even have the distribution capabilities that Stephon Marbury has. You know, Marbury is doing the work. He's in China, so he's near the factories that make sneakers that he's been developing. So, you know, LeVar also put himself in a – he put his son in a box by – making all these outlandish claims. You shut him off, you know, in terms of the NBA draft by having him only work out for the LA Lakers. And I just read an article, the coach, Luke Walton, said they are going to look to what he was at UCLA and that coach at UCLA. And I said recently on a post, so you know your money is affected because the NBA draft is tiered. If your son drops, that's less money for your son to make.
Yo, but let me say this. I'll say this on your show again tomorrow.
Right.
I don't give a damn what Longley thinks. If he passes, if Lonzo Ball is available, and he passes on mm-hmm. Lonzo Ball over some bullshit, then he should be fired. And that's my
word. You say Magic Johnson? You said Magic Johnson? You said if the Lakers pass him?
Yeah, if the Lakers pass on Lonzo Ball, if he's available at number 2, because the Lakers got number 2, right?
Yes, sir.
So if the Celtics don't take Lonzo Ball, and he's there mm-hmm. at number 2, and they don't take him because Luke Walton said something or whatever, then they should be fired. Because from what I'm hearing, you know, out of the many people that are available, Lonzo Ball is only one that's really special like that. So if you're going to treat him like, I mean, man, brother, what number did Paul Pierce go at? I think Paul Pierce went 7th.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, it was something ridiculous. And I was like, I didn't even watch that much college ball, and I knew Paul Pierce was the man. And I was watching the draft, mm-hmm. and I was like, what? Every time a new person picked, and he didn't pick Paul Pierce, I was like, what's wrong with these people? And I remember when he first came in the league, like his first 2 years, all of those people who didn't take him, he would score 30 on every last one of them.
Yeah, he did.
So, you know what I'm saying? So in my judgment, I mean, off the topic of nationhood and our sports, yo, if you all take Lonzo Ball because of some political, office politic kind of stupid dynamic, you should be fired.
Mm-hmm.
And that tells me that Magic
right.
Johnson is in a popularity contest and he really ain't using his head. Because if that kid is available at number 2, all you got to do is sit there, hold your breath, and pray that they don't take him at number 1. And if he's there at number 2, because
mm-hmm.
that's what you need. You need somebody, like, you know I'm a Lakers fan. You need somebody that's going to give that ball up in a Jason Kidd kind of mode, and that's who he is.
Right. Right.
I mean, it's not, I'm not saying that they're going to, like, you know, Lonzo said. I mean, LeVar said that they're going to make the playoffs next year, and that's crazy. But the reality of it is, I bet you he'll double the games because that's what he did at UCLA.
Yeah. Right.
You know what I'm saying? 1 year they made 15, and the next year when he was there, they went from 15 to 30. So I expect him to at least add that many games to the Lakers, but we ain't going nowhere for a long time. So you might as well build it block by block. And if you have Lonzo Ball and the word gets out that he gets you the ball and he gets you the ball far away from defenders in good spacing, what do you think that's going to do for shooters who want to come in? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So to me,
mm-hmm.
son, if you pass on him talking about, I'm looking at his conduct and stuff like that, like I need to come to LA and punch you in your mouth. Because we have nothing.
Well, Magic,
we have nothing. And if you're going to take some other 19-year-old stiff that's not, I mean, listen, I don't like the way his dad is barking and all that other stuff in the media, but that kid can play. And if you don't take him at number 2, you should be fired. Magic should be fired. Kobe should be exiled. Like,
and they should bring back Jim Buck.
That's my word. Like, I'm sitting over
Magic,
there.
Magic
I'm saying
did
myself,
say. Magic did say that regardless of LeVar's conduct, they don't care about him. They care more about who Lonzo is and who Lonzo is as a player. And he said that's how they are going to approach the draft. So we'll see. We'll see come June.
Oh, man, I really, really hope, like, I really, really hope that they just do the right thing because it looks like, I mean, Let's be honest, and I'm pretty sure y'all talked about this. I haven't been here in a while, but if you're the Celtics, you can't take you can't take Lonzo because you got Isaiah. You can't. You know,
mm-hmm.
even though if I was them, what I would do, I would take Lonzo and then I would try to get more. I try to get like 2 draft picks from the Lakers, but that's neither here nor there. You can't take him, so he's gonna fall to you.
Yeah.
And if you don't take him, I'm coming out there. That's all I know. What are you gonna say?
I agree with you. But you know what I wanted to say also, you know, all the points you brought up about us being materialistic, I think that's just I don't know where it comes from, that, but that's always something about American black people. We tend to fall into the trap of material things, and we tend to fall into the trap of, well, damn, Minister Daoud got the fly Nikes on. He got some jewelry. I ain't got it, but I'm gonna take it. And
right.
You know, like you said, caught up. Also, I just have to say, hip hop influenced fashion, you know, majorly.
Right.
We
indeed.
Went from an era where guys, we always had dudes who would dress fly in hip hop.
Right.
And then we went to a point where it went ultra fly with Puffy and Biggie and
mm-hmm.
Jay-Z, where these guys were name dropping Cristal and name dropping, you know, various liquors, and then they were naming.
See,
you know,
now, Mac, I'm sorry,
other
but
big
I'm
name material,
because I got to disagree with you here. You know what and you're gonna see what I'm saying when I say what I'm going to say. The
mm-hmm.
first fly dude that was dropping fashion to me was Pooba.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I believe yeah,
he was. He was one of them dudes. But I was talking more. I mean, really excessive. They talking about Benzes and jets. And,
oh yes, sir. You're right there.
You
definitely
know,
right. The people were talking about pants and shirts. They was talking about that kind of stuff. You're right.
And I was listening to a coworker at work. There's a young lady
mm-hmm.
who she cleans in the building, and she was talking to one of the ladies I work with, and they were talking specifically about buying bags. And
right.
I know bags are expensive, and bags are things sisters and women in general like. So they,
yep.
I'm figuring the young lady, she was a security guard in the building, and she went to clean in the building. She's making more money. She got two kids, and she was saying she's going to buy her daughter a $700 bag. I'm like, $700 for a bag?
Wow.
Really? And I remember when I was younger, I was trying to date this young lady. I knew she liked bags. So me
mm-hmm.
chasing her, I decided to buy her a bag. She didn't like the bag I bought, though, because the bag was a nice leather bag.
Right.
I guess it wasn't coach enough for her.
Oh, God. Listen, I heard, man, it was actually on a conscious radio show. I heard, like, there's an underground movement of sisters who literally, like, have sex with dudes that have money strictly for bags.
Hey,
I'm not sure if that's true,
but
there's
that.
A couple of people that can afford that and said that's what it is. It was like, yo, it's like an industry, not an industry per se, but like, you know, one of those shallow industries, like, because let's be honest, like, you know, there's all sorts of sex trafficking that's going on, but it's not necessarily called sex trafficking. So,
right.
You know, because we've always wanted what we can't get. And men,
mm-hmm.
you know, we do certain things to get stuff, and females do certain things to get stuff, and they always say you got to use what you got to get what you want. And I'm not approved of that in any way, shape, or form, but I do know it exists.
Right.
So, you know, up here, they had this one group of sisters, they called them the Sneaker Clique. And these sisters, they, you know, they slept with dudes for sneaker money, and they championed that. And you just knew if you got with one of them, they sneaker click, you got to come with that bread, and they're going to, you know what I'm saying, they'll lay down, but you got to give them money for sneakers. Likewise,
right.
I heard that there was also, like, a movement, like, all around the country of sisters that basically sleep with dudes for special bags. And now you're telling me that these bags are, like, $100 and stuff like that. I can see that now. So it's really sad to me, brother man, because at the end of the day, it's like, I don't know, I'm going to do a show about this because I do a lot of research on relationships and intimacy because that's what I talk about when
right.
I preach at the temple. And in that, it talks about the changing of the roles that was spurred by the Industrial Revolution. And one of the things that they were saying mm-hmm. was is that the woman's place became different because, you know, with the Industrial Revolution and the machines, the woman no longer, it's not that she didn't want to leave the home, it's that she was no longer valued for what she did in the home, because a lot of what she did in the home was now replaced by machines. And I looked at that and I was like, wow, like I never really even thought about that. So I know that you and I, you know, we, again, I'm not ever saying that I didn't have any fly sneakers or anything like that, because I definitely had fly sneakers when I was younger. Not necessarily as expensive and fly as everybody else's, but definitely in the mid-range, mm-hmm. decent. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And when I got older and I finally got money to pay for these things, you know, like maybe 1 or 2 years before I came in the nation, I started to go crazy. Like I was trying to buy, you know, all the stuff that I didn't have when I was younger. But thank God, like I came in and it kind of calmed me down, because then I realized that it's not really about what I'm wearing, it's about what I accomplish. And that's, to me, I think the premise of this whole show is that when we say land infrastructure nationhood is is the ultimate end game, it's the ultimate goal, you can't really focus on land infrastructure nationhood if you're constantly worrying about how expensive what you got on is. And I see that a lot of times with some of the people even that I deal with in certain classes that I'm teaching now, where, you know, the poorest of people come in with the most expensive stuff, man. And if you talk about this stuff, you get called, you're called a redneck Republican, a hater or whatever. But for me, I'm not mm-hmm. trying to hate. I'm just telling you that you're shooting yourself in the foot, and we ain't never going to get up if all we're thinking about is how much we, you know, how much the cost, what's the cost of what we're wearing, I believe.
Right. Not even what we're wearing. Phones. The phone industry is crazy. I like the LG phone because it suits my purposes. It suits my needs. So I remember I'm sitting at work and young guy messenger comes by. He goes, "Oh, you got that BS LG." I said, you know, I do film production and video production, so this camera works well in that modicum. It takes great pictures, and the video is good. Now, I use it, you know, in a professional setting. So I just laughed. I said, you realize I got a 4K camera on this phone? Because he said, I got a 4K camera. I said, so do I. What? You paid for the name.
Word.
And I said, you got beat.
And, you know,
and then
I
had
about 4K? I'm sorry, go ahead.
I found out about
4K is, what'd you say?
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, brother.
Oh, sorry. What I found out about 4K is you could have a 4K camera and a 4K lens, but if you don't have a 4K monitor, it's a waste of money.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It's a waste of money. You're not going to get all the details. So it's like they're trying to sell 4K cameras in my industry, because, you know, I'm in the security industry, and them bad boys cost, brother, man, like almost $1,000. But
yes,
when you're streaming the video back to a monitor, if your monitor is not 4K, you wasted your money, because it's not going to get all the details. It's the same thing as back in the day when you used to have, like, high-def television. You would pay for it. There was people out there paying for high-def cable, and if they didn't have a high-def TV, they thought they were getting something, but you got to have that kind of TV. To me, you're right. It's like it's an excellent point that you're making. People is paying for a name, and they told you it's 4K. Give me $5,000. You know what I'm saying? So you went and you did that, but you're not even experiencing real 4K, because if you did, you'd be like, yeah, damn, because 4K, like, that's nothing to be sneezing at, B.
Right. And we realized that, you know, our people, you know, in America, we spend. We don't create anything, and that's probably we don't create anything because we don't have a home.
Right, indeed.
You know,
indeed.
You know, and we spend. But very rarely do we create anything, and America knows that. That's why you know, I worked in advertising. What do you see now going on? I see a lot of advertisers, video advertisements, using a lot of old hip hop music. using a lot of old R&B to sell their products, using a lot of hip hop themed things to sell our music. They're using our culture to sell their products.
Wow. It's interesting, man, because I get the Napster streaming service, and, you know, because I just get tired of using YouTube sometimes and listening to the commercials. And I like the ability to just dial up somebody's name, and I get their whole career. But what makes me feel good about it is because, you know, if you've heard me before, you know my philosophy is I don't like to get free stuff when it comes down to music because I wouldn't want you to get my service free, so why should I get your service free?
Right,
so,
same way.
You know, if I'm paying my $9.99 a month or whatever it is I'm paying for Napster, then that means that they're getting something from it. I don't know how much they get from it, but I know they're getting something from it.
Right.
I feel better about it.
Right.
But the main point that I'm trying to say is that I look at that now and I'm like, wow, you know, these dudes, they made their money at their time. But it's interesting. Like, you'd have to get a music historian on here to talk about it, but I really think that rap music – it only had like maybe a small period of time in which there was mega bucks being made because Sugar Hill Gang didn't make, you know, Bugs Bunny money, and the rappers of today don't necessarily make Bugs Bunny money. But then there was a short period of time, your Nas, Redman, people like that, where they was actually all making really good money at some point, and then it just died with the piracy. So.
Right.
It's like you said, if you don't create something where you have it your own, like, you know, all of these people kept saying, one day I'm going to have my masters, one day I'm going to buy my catalog of music, and then the day came where buying a catalog of music doesn't really mean nothing anyway.
Right. Right. Look at Daz from the Dog Pound. I remember I was reading an article somewhere in, I'd say, the early 2000s. He bought a CD plant. He was creating, you know, physically making CDs.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, snap. That's what we need to do. But then shortly right after that, everything became digital where everything is online. So he, you know, great idea. He came up with it kind of late to buy a CD pressing plant. He's outdated now. He can't. There's still physical CDs being sold, but not as much as in the early 2000s.
Not at all, man.
No, and getting back to land infrastructure and nationhood. We need our own land so that we can create our own things and certain people can prosper monetarily.
Right.
We you know, could have our own record companies. We have our own TV, our own radio, as opposed to waiting for somebody to sign us and waiting, like you said, with the music industry, waiting for distribution and waiting for somebody to cut you a check, you know, create our own. And, you know, like I said, my cousin's son wants to be an oceanographer.
Mm-hmm.
We need somebody to study water and what goes on in the water, in the sea.
Indeed, brother.
In the world.
Indeed.
Especially a black man. So we need all those things, and we need it all encapsulated in our own land where we can be free and able to move and not worry about somebody taking it away from us.
Right. I agree with you wholeheartedly. Yeah, that's exciting. Listen, brother, it's 8:30. I'm going to bounce because I got to get up early in the morning. I thank you for coming on.
Yes,
what time is it? It's 9 o'clock, right?
9:30 tomorrow.
9:30. Sure. Okay, I will definitely be there. I was going to be there for the last one. And right. That's okay though. That's okay. I'm definitely gonna be there for this one because I want to hear it and I want to add my own to it. So I will be there.
And my friend,
if you're listening to this, so I'm sorry, go ahead.
My friend, please tune in the paint. We're gonna talk more about LeVar Ball. I have a friend coming on who I went to high school with. He has worked in the sneaker industry, and he is a sneaker head. And I know there's a subculture where people buy sneakers and they sell them, and that's what a lot of young people are doing. And we're going to talk about Flood Adam.
That's what I'm talking about. Like, people always put down that next generation, and they doing so much more different stuff than we did, bro.
Right, right. I have a. I want to make one point. I have a friend, Chinese friend. His son is 16 or 17. He's a sneaker collector, but he'll buy. He is sustaining himself by buying sneakers and then selling them. He might buy three pairs on
eBay.
Yeah, he might buy three pairs of sneakers. Now, since he is Chinese, I know he is taking the sneakers and selling them, you know, like you said, on eBay or on some other place where you can where people bid for the sneaker and you name your price, and he's selling them for more than he paid for them, and he has a little racket going.
Wow.
And other kids are doing it as well.
Man, and then eventually he'll expand that to some other stuff, because once you get that entrepreneurial deal-making bug, it just doesn't get out your blood, man.
Right.
All right, big brother, let me get going. Thanks, man, and I will see you Monday night.
All right. Peace, brother. Great show tonight. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you for being here. Peace.